This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
The ESPN app, your smart speaker as well. You can get it everywhere. Chris Garland in for Alan Hahn. It is Bart and Hahn on this Thursday, March the 11th, 2021. And it was 1 year ago today that sports shut down. We've been talking about it throughout the course of the show. ESPN Radio, as always, presented by Progressive Insurance. And all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline and Ryan Rucco of ESPN and, of course, of the YES Network joins us right now on the Goodyear Hotline because Ryan was the guy, along with Doris Burke, who was calling that very last game of the NBA before the shutdown. It was Mavs Nuggets last year, and he joins us now to kind of remember just how bizarre of a night that was. Ryan, it's Chris and Bart. Just what are the first things that you think of when you think of that night with your game being the only one played at that point?
Man, Chris, the first thing I think of is how surreal it felt. You know, I think we've all become adjusted to this new normal that we've lived with for a year now. And so because of that, you know, I think we sometimes forget just the panic we all felt, the fear, the confusion, the curiosity, and how it really did feel like this invisible enemy was closing down on us. And we had no idea how it was going to reshape the landscape of our daily lives. And obviously, you know, some people have paid the ultimate price from this virus, and others have been affected tragically in different ways. And everybody, in at least some way, has been totally and completely altered when it comes to their normal habits and routines. And I just think about that from that day, Chris, like wondering what was going to happen. Doris and I having lunch that day with our production crew, Ian Gruca, our producer, Jeff Evers, our director, and Tom Rinaldi, who was on sideline. And us talking about, is this going to be the last game where we have fans? You know, it might be. Are we not going to be on the road anymore? Yeah, you know, we might not be. But I don't think we ever thought it was going to be the last night that any games were played. And so when that news came down, it was shocking. Even though we could all sense that we were headed in some sort of direction towards that, we didn't think the whole season would shut down. And then you had this weird juxtaposition of this very, you know, scary global news story, so to speak, you know, breaking during the game, and then a game going on in front of us and trying to balance those two things.
You know, the thing that sticks out to me the most is just Mark Cuban's face when he got the news on the side and his reaction, like, oh, my God. And he's like, hold up, you're the owner. You're supposed to be tapped in better than anybody, and this is surprising you. I don't think any of us believe that it would be this deep or it would go this long, right? We thought that maybe, you know, maybe it'd be a week or two. We heard sound from Adam Silver with Greeny that thinking it maybe 30 days and you'll be back to normal. I mean, I don't think any of us anticipated it would be going a year later. And you look at Duke right now being shut down, you know, because COVID case as well, and it's still affecting us already 365 days later.
Yeah, Bart, I think the point you made at the beginning of that is the one that resonated most with me, too. And it's the sheer shock of Mark Cuban's reaction. Because, you know, we're all so much more educated about the virus now that it's hard to put ourselves exactly back in the place we were on March 11th. But, you know, we always have this sort of this inclination that the people who run a league, who are in the know, they may know that, you know, something's about to happen, things are about to break. They have their hands around, you know, what maybe is about to happen with a given league, a given sport, or a given business. And when you see that shot of Mark Cuban, you realize just how foreign this territory was to everybody, including him, someone who was obviously very much in the know. And that's why I think the shot resonates so much, is because you would have thought, like, oh, Mark Cuban's sitting there probably knowing, yeah, this is going to be our last game. Well, no, he wasn't. He had no idea, because this was literally a circumstance and an enemy, so to speak, that none of us had ever dealt with.
Ryan Rucco, ESPN and YES Network. He calls the Nets there as well, along with Ian Eagle at times. So now, Ryan, take us through kind of behind the scenes there. As word started to filter in, what are they telling you in your headset during the game? Kind of fill us in as to how that all played out behind the scenes with the broadcast.
Yeah, for sure, Chris. I don't remember if it was right before we were about to go on air, if it was in the first quarter, but Doris on her phone had seen something going on with the Utah-Oklahoma City game. And nobody knew exactly what yet. And Chris, you know from being a play-by-play guy yourself, when it comes to those kind of things, you're not going to go on the air with anything speculative, right? So we had the truck then tracking, hey, let us know if something happens in this Utah-OKC game so we can bring it up on the air. Because there was some thought, because Gobert had been listed with an illness, maybe he actually has coronavirus. Remember, that's how we were calling it then. We weren't calling it SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19. And we were having that tracked by the truck. But we hadn't gotten a definitive update yet. And as we got into the game, I forget if it was in the second or the third quarter. I actually was going to go back and watch today. But we were about to go to break. And literally, just as we were about to go to break, I think I had an 8 count in my ear. Ian Gruka, our producer, said, Ryan, tease massive news on the other side of the break. And then you're hearing 3, 2, 1. I just said big news on the other side of the break. And I didn't know what it was. And I'm thinking, oh, Gobert must have, you know, tested positive for COVID, because we were kind of tracking that and wondering. And then we get to break, and Ian tells me in my headset, he says, hey, Scott Van Pelt's going to take it out of break. He's going to be joined by Woj, and Woj is going to announce that the NBA is suspending its season. And immediately, Doris and I are like, what? You know, I was prepared to be, you know, floored enough with the news about Gobert testing positive. And just the news that it was being suspended was shocking. And then all of a sudden, the broadcast became sort of this balance between news and sport, because now the primary story is obviously this. But there's this weird juxtaposition, because the audience is still seeing action going on the court in front of us, so we have to pay some attention to it. But you're not going to get quite as excited as you were, because it seems sort of trivial. But then by the end of the game, it seemed more important, because we knew it was going to be our last game for a while. And look, it was our last game with a full arena, right? To this point, it still is. So it was really interesting just navigating it. And I give credit to Mark Cuban, because he actually came over to our broadcast table. We were trying to coordinate with their PR just to get him on the air that night to share whatever he could. And he came over to our broadcast table to chat with me and Doris. And Doris said, hey, is there any chance you go on with Tom? And he said, yeah, absolutely. And so he kind of organized it himself. We were doing the interview 6 feet apart. And that was how we knew that the players were aware of what happened. Because Mark told Tom in his interview, yes, the players know the season's been suspended. They know this is the last game. And it also allowed us to sort of observe the way they were invested at the end of the game, knowing that it was going to be their last game for some time.
You know, Ryan, it's fascinating when you think back as to how the landscape has really changed, and we know how many people the virus has affected in such a horrible way. You know, you look at it all, and a year later, the role that sports has played not only on the front end, but on the back end of it, of helping to advance kind of science along the way, these kinds of things, just as you look at it as a whole, how do you kind of evaluate how sports has played a positive role in helping people get through this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that first and foremost, what Adam Silver did that night and what the NBA did that night, I think in a lot of ways woke our country up to the reality of the situation. And, you know, if the sports leagues had continued to put their heads in the sand, I don't know what the reaction would have been in our country. I really feel like the NBA was a needed leader at that time to kind of make us all feel the reality, because, you know, sports is such a part of our daily lives. And, you know, the old saying, the show must go on. I think we sort of, you know, we take that for granted and just know, okay, no matter what's going on in my life today, at 7 o'clock, this game's coming on. Or at Wednesday and Friday nights, I'm getting an NBA on ESPN doubleheader. Might as well give the plug, right? Whatever it is, we kind of like, we kind of feel that. But when you see that all of a sudden be tossed on its head, it's disorienting. And it makes you face that cold reality of, oh, this is different. Things aren't going to be the same. The paradigm has shifted. And so I think, you know, sports was important just to make us sort of wake up to things. I think they've also been leaders as far as giving blueprints for how to navigate safely. I know You know, when it came to the NFL and their protocols, and granted, they have a budget that many companies, other leagues, collegiate sports don't necessarily have. But I know that a lot of local government leaders ended up conferring with the NFL and with teams about how they were able to navigate their workspaces the way that they were without having any sustained community spread. And so sports has been a leader in that sense as well. But more than anything else, Chris, I feel like sports has been important in this time because we all need, you know, we need a little joy, right? In order to get through these periods of time. And granted, that's all when you, that all only is possible when you have a backdrop of safety, right? That's first and foremost. You don't want people out there if that can't be safely done. But if it can, and I think these leagues have proven by and large that they can navigate it safely, I think it's given us all something to root for, to be invested in, to at times be distracted by, and to just find a little joy with during a difficult time. And you know, that may sound trivial, but it's not. You know, it's not trivial to find spaces in your day to smile and be happy and be able to exhale and relax when you're going through something that can just, you know, raise your stress levels to a baseline that nobody wants to have on a daily basis.
Well, when you talk about that and what sports did, I think the NBA set the table when you talk about having a bubble, you know, the players being disciplined, and that's what it was. It was like putting the onus and the responsibility on the athletes to be responsible and do the right things, which a lot of guys opted out of the NFL season because they didn't think that they could trust their teammates to do the right thing. But you think about the bubble and coming out of the bubble, and now we're here where we're out of the bubble, and you look at what has come, and, you know, this is the NBA's second season under Corona. Most teams are just on – most leagues are only on their first. And, you know, one of the things that came out is the Nets and Kevin Durant coming back in his return. And, you know, now it seems like it's an arms race, right? Was Blake Griffin just preventative from stopping LeBron, you know, to be able to get, you know, another talented player to help him out as Anthony Davis is injured? And now with the news about LaMarcus Aldridge, is it game on?
You know what, Bart? I think it's game on for anybody out there. You know, I mean, I think, you know, I don't think the Nets need anything to win a championship. I think they are not a totally and completely team without flaw. But I also think if they have all their pieces healthy, they already are constructed in a way in which they can win a championship. I do believe that. It never hurts to have more. And I also think you want to cover your bases. And so in the case of Blake Griffin, I think it's, hey, you know, if this guy's knee can be healthy, if he can find some of that, you know, explosion, you know, he could be a real weapon as a small ball five for the Nets off the bench. And he's a low risk, high reward guy who also is going to fit into the locker room well. Can play make and can maybe even take on, and I know Kevin O'Connor's talked about this with the Ringer some, like he can take on that Bruce Brown role a little bit, which is proved fruitful. And with Aldridge, yeah, maybe he's another big body that could, you know, provide the Nets even more directly with what they would need. So I think, Bart, I think that it's no stone unturned. I think the Nets are going to keep looking at those options. I think maybe, you know, maybe they look at something to help them as far as a defender on the wing. You know, maybe they keep looking at bigs. And I think that they know right now they have an opportunity to win a championship this year, and they will do everything they can to try and seal up any little cracks they think they have in the foundation.
No, I was talking about Aldridge being brought in by LeBron as, okay, I see your Blake Griffin,
oh,
an Aldridge.
Got you. Well, yeah, man, I think – absolutely. I absolutely think the Lakers would try and do that, man. Of course. I think any team that's going for, you know, a big is going to have interest in Aldridge. And more so than that, to your point, Bart, and I apologize for misunderstanding, to your point, yes, it is an arms race. Like, any of those teams who are looking at a chance at a championship are thinking about those marginal moves that they can make that can help put them over the top. And I think that's the Lakers, that's the Bucks, that's the Jazz, that's the Clippers, that's the Sixers, that's the Nets. I think all those teams, maybe a couple others, squeeze in there as well. But those teams for sure.
Ryan Rucco with us, of course, calls games, NBA games on ESPN in addition to Nets games on ESPN. And Ryan, all right, so is this just me trying to poke holes in what looks like an unbeatable situation when I proposed the following two potential issues for the Nets? they don't defend enough to win a championship potentially, or you may not have these guys play together enough before the playoffs roll around and thus having maybe a little difficulty meshing in the playoffs. Am I being unreasonable?
You're not being unreasonable. I think if you were declaring that definitively, you'd be being unreasonable. But asking the question, I think asking the question is reasonable, Chris. I think from the second point you bring up, I don't think will be an issue. I mean, one thing we've seen is James Harden has come here with such a selfless mindset, and he has just so embraced being whatever kind of playmaker this team needs him to be in order to get the most out of his teammates, that I don't think meshing is going to be hard with the ball in his hands and him orchestrating. And we already saw, you know, in the six games that those three started together, the Nets were 5-1. The only game they lost was that weird loss at the end to the Wizards. And they just look like an absolute force. So I really don't have any worries about meshing. I think health is the only concern there, making sure that Durant is completely and totally healthy. You don't want him coming back from his hamstring, having an issue again, and then he's out longer. The defense, look, this team, no matter what, they're not going to be a top-tier defensive team. They're not. But can they be good enough defensively where they can win a title? I think they can. I think we've seen it against the best teams in the league. When they played the top competition, they've turned up the focus and intensity enough defensively where they can play at a level needed to win a title. It's not going to be their calling card, but I think it can be good enough that they're so great everywhere else that they are a championship team.
All right, Ryan. Yesterday, Stephen A. Smith came on this very show and said that if the Knicks make the playoffs and the Nets don't win a title, the Knicks will have had a more successful season than the Nets. Your take?
No, that's ridiculous. I love my old co-host Stephen A. I love him, but that is a preposterous take. You telling me? I mean, I think because the Nets have, you know, added so much talent within this season as well, I think people forget where they're coming from just a few years ago. Like, the fact that the Nets even have these pieces, regardless of what they end up doing, makes this season a rousing success when you consider that it was just a few years ago you were trying to figure out if a backcourt of Donald Sloan and Wayne Ellington and Isaiah Whitehead could win you games. You know, I mean, this is a completely different animal. Tom Thibodeau has the Knicks playing hard. They have absolutely, I think, turned the page when it comes to, you know, kind of what they've been dealing with culturally over the last 20 years. And I think Leon Rose and World Wide West and the rest of the Knicks front office, there's a lot to be excited about there. But if you're telling me the Nets are going to go to the finals and lose to the Lakers and the Knicks are going to get ousted in five games in a first-round series, and I'm going to look at the Knicks season as more successful than the Nets, that is an absolutely ridiculous approach, and it is for sure taking the Knicks off the hook for the way they've run their franchise just to have to try and build back to this point. Let's not forget that the Nets have had to build back to this point as well, and that should not be forgotten.
Right, so that's where I want to go, you know, because if the Knicks look like they're following the model of building young and developing young players and making a move to try and get them a young star. If the Knicks were what they are today when Kyrie and KD were free agents, would they be cool enough to be able to join that team? You know, they already had DeAndre Jordan. You thought it would have been cool enough. Would they have been cool enough with World Wide West and everybody? And if so, what does that mean as far as them getting a superstar that they've been coveting for a long time, like a Zach LaVine, I believe, or Devin Booker?
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know. I mean, I think what people – what has to be remembered with the Nets and what Sean Marks did, and this is to your point, Bart, is the way they built the franchise back up to become, you know, attractive enough to be on anyone's radar, right? And I think Nets fans have to forever be indebted to D'Angelo Russell because of that as well. And Spencer Dinwiddie and Joe Harris and Jared Allen, Caris LeVert, what those guys did to make the Nets relevant and to put a spotlight on what they were doing culturally. But Sean Marks also was doing a lot of different things behind the scenes to make, you know, this organization as player-friendly as any in American sports. And I think that those little things, word gets around, and then you start thinking like, oh, you know, the roster, man, they know how to kind of, you know, they know how to develop auxiliary parts, and they know how to, you know, get those different pieces around stars that are needed, where the ground is fertile. So if I come there, boom, we're instantly a contender. And I think that that should be the model, and that should be the goal for the Knicks. But it has to be sustained beyond the first half of one season. I do think, you know, that they are potentially on their way to being an option that people can consider, you know, building assets, showing, you know, more of a winning culture, and having also role players around where stars would feel like, hey, I have the guys I need if I come there. But Bart, I'm not ready to say that ground is totally, you know, ready yet. I think they are on their way to that situation, though, and I do think it should be their blueprint.
Okay, so headline from this interview, Rucco to Stephen A., get lost. Can I take that away from this?
Yeah, pretty much. Except that you know what? That's my guy, and I love Stephen endlessly, but you know, in all of his
a lot of qualifiers here, Bart.
No. I'm going to say for all of his assertive takes, I'm going to say that is probably the most preposterous one I've ever heard.
Ryan, awesome stuff, man. We appreciate it as always.
Thank you guys for having me. Great stuff. Love listening to you guys, and hope your families and everyone are safe and healthy.
You as well. Ryan Rucco of ESPN and the YES Network. Plenty of NBA games on his docket in the second half, and excited for that. Coming up, we've got audio files. In just moments, we will hear from Adam Silver some more on what he had to say with Greeny earlier today. Ryan Rucco brought you the Straight Talk. Brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. It's Chris Carlin in for Alan Hahn. Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
It's Barton Hahn, Chris Carlin in for Alan Hahn here on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, and of course, your smart speaker. ESPN Radio is always presented by Progressive Insurance. With more than 30 unique coverage options, Progressive knows small business. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. All right, Bartholomew, it is time for audio files. All right, let us start with some big news yesterday for the NHL. The NHL returning to ESPN and a lot of games on ESPN Plus as well. First up, Gary Bettman on this situation being a win-win.
For us, this reflected the reality of what the media world's looking like now. This was the best of both worlds. We're getting the linear exposure that more traditionally we need and want. And at the same time, we're on the cutting edge of what's coming with streaming. And the numbers are already tremendously strong in terms of how many people have Hulu and ESPN Plus. This is a win-win-win. A win for ESPN and the Walt Disney Company, a win for the NHL, and most important, a win for fans.
You know, Bart, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I've always been the biggest NHL fan, but there's been something about the years back that added a little something when it was on, when the playoffs were on ESPN, that really, I don't know, it added an excitement level to it for me a little bit.
Such a homer. I tell you what, who wrote that speech for Gary Bettman? DJ Cali, win. How many wins were in that thing? But I tell you what, the fans do win, because I understand. You understand where I'm from. I'm from Hockey Town, damn it. The greatest hockey player in my generation to me, well, not my generation, is Gordie Howe. You know, then I go to the real original captain, Steve Yzerman, Sergei Fedorov, all the great Red Wings who are the Yankees of hockey. But
you
I tell
take
you what.
The tour
I
did, Joe Louis Arena, too, while we're
no,
at
they,
it? Come
they
on.
Tore it down, man. It's done. It's a wrap.
I know. You'll find a way.
but you know what? What I love about this is, listen, it's hard to find NBC Sports. I don't even know what channel that is, man. It's like, where's Waldo? Find a needle in a haystack. We all know where ESPN is. So being able to put it on a better platform is going to allow the game to be seen and people to have more exposure to it, because I just believe that ESPN does a better job in presenting the product. So I think it is a win-win-win.
That's what I was talking about.
Okay,
you're getting all over me for being a homer. Yeah, I mean, Doc Emmerich's the greatest there's ever been. Gary Thorne was an amazing play-by-play guy.
I love Barry Melrose. Yeah, man, just the hair alone and the suits. You know what I mean? All good.
Absolutely. Listen, if I could grow that mullet, man, I would, even with this bald head. I absolutely would. Meanwhile,
no, actually, you can, though. You just can't have it on the top. You just don't have it on the top.
Exactly. Well, it would look bad. It would look bad the way it is. Not that it looks good anyway. Here's Jimmy Pitaro, president of ESPN, on the deal.
Couldn't be more pleased that we've been able to make this happen and bring the NHL back to Disney for the first time since 2004. This really is a paradigm-shifting deal that only the Walt Disney Company can do. It illustrates some of the ways our company is truly distinctive and serves as a model for rights deals of the future. And as we're already seeing on social, this deal is going to make a lot of people happy, including a lot of ESPN employees who are incredibly passionate about the NHL and are very excited to dig in.
Hey, the hockey fan's going to end up winning out of this, because the fact that it is coming to ESPN Plus, it's going to make a big difference in terms of streaming. And everybody's right. This is where it's all headed as it is.
Yeah, I'm going to have to sharpen up on my stuff. I know the Red Wings have been bumped for a little while, so I got to gotta dust up on my hockey fandom. Pull out
my
old jersey.
Fresher. We'll get you a refresher. Dak Prescott's press conference yesterday. Here he is on his expectations of himself now that he's got $160 million in his pocket.
Eagerness, excitement, anxiousness to give this organization and the Jones family everything that they invested in. And that's a Super Bowl, and that's to go win. Pressure is privilege, and I'm privileged to have it. I'm privileged to, that this organization, they believe in me. They put their faith in me. But if I said, if you know me, you know who I am. I walk every day with the faith and what I believe in, and my expectations are so, so high. I believe my expectations for myself are higher than anybody's out there.
Yeah, my mom used to always tell me, shoot for the stars and land on the moon, son. So, yeah, so shoot for the Super Bowl and land in the divisional round, because that's where they're going to live at when you think about that organization. But I tell you what, congratulations, Dak, you got your money, and that's all that's important for you. You've earned it. You deserve it. But I tell you what, y'all ain't going no damn where. Stop.
I do love the idea of standing in the back of one of those press conference rooms with just a little clicker and hitting off the number of cliches you're going to hear every time we're talking
Pressure's
about
privilege.
It. He squeezed in
he
about
got that from,
of them.
He got that from Google, man. Oh. It was trending.
And then there's Adam Silver, who was earlier today on with Greeny, as, of course, it's a year ago since the NBA shut down March 11th, 2020. But there were other issues to discuss, including the effect that the three-point line is having on the game today and if there are some alterations that need to be made.
We're constantly looking at tinkering at the game. We've moved the three-point line. As you recall, we moved it in once, then we moved it back out, then we moved it to a slightly different place on the floor. I think as the caliber of the shooting has gotten better, I mean, you know, Bob Cousy said to me last year, you know, of all people, like he said, fans today don't understand the skill level of these players, what they're doing by shooting from that length on the floor with the kind of accuracy they do. Having said that, you want a diverse game. And I think you recall, Mike, my early days in the league, everyone used to complain there was too much dunking.
Mm-hmm.
And that we had a lot of, you know, a lot of great athletes in the league, but they weren't skilled in the way that you see a lot of these players now. So are we at the right balance? I'm sure there may be some adjustments we can make. I mean, I think, again, there's so much great about the game right now, but the three-point line in particular is something we'll continue to look at.
Come on, right. Son.
I know. I'm just going to give you a stat, okay? As of right now, there have been 61 games all time in the history of the league where two teams have combined to attempt 90 threes in the game. 90. 45 of them have happened since the beginning of last year. I mean, come on. It is at times a bit much.
Blame that on D'Antoni. That's all his squads. The Houston team that missed 27 straight. Go in and make a layup, dummy. Listen, I mean, don't mess up a good game, man. Listen,
Harden was 43 of those 45.
It's like, you know what I mean? These guys have done a great job in being able to, you know, even the big man have done a great job being able to move out. Let's not expand it again, because then what happens is Ben Simmons will never have a three-point attempt in his career, and it'd be justified. Make it a four-point line.
He's outside 15 listen, anyway.
Well, make it a
matter listen, where you
because it's only so many guys that can hit it like that. You think about, you know, you think about Steph Curry, you think about his little brother, you think about Dame Dollar. Like, come on, man, make it a four-point line then, and make it really interesting and reward the people that's really pulling these logo threes up, opposed to the ones that's shooting the, you know, on the line, toe slightly behind the line, three-pointer. Make a four-point line.
All right, so where's the four-point line? How much further back? You're talking about at the logo? Is that what you're talking about?
Well,
what are you talking about?
Exactly. Well, you remember during the three-point contest where they had the Mountain Dew shots from? Put it around there. Make it there. So if you pull it up from there purposely, then you deserve 4 points.
You're going to hate this idea, too.
Pick
them
up full court.
I saw it proposed the other day.
Okay.
You're going to hate this, too, but I saw it proposed the other day. Perhaps limiting the number of three-point attempts you can take in a game.
No, that's not garbage.
Or take in a half, like 20 in the first half, 30 in the second half.
No, that's how that's how garbage. Who's going to keep track? Right, J.R. Smith didn't even know how many timeouts there were. J.R. Smith didn't even know how many timeouts they had left. You expect him to know how many threes they attempted? Like, stop it, man. That's too much thinking for players. Let them damn react and play basketball, man.
Listen, I love the three-point shot, okay? I want it to continue to happen. I side with you on the idea of having a four-point shot, too. I think that adds even more to the game. Think about the potential of some dummy just fouling somebody on a potential five-point play. Think about how bad that could be.
Down 10 yeah. Seconds left, no problem.
We're going to make it happen, Captain. Exactly. But at the very least, I do think it gets out of hand sometimes with the amount of threes that are taken by guys that should not be taken, the amount of threes that
exactly.
They're taking.
Every once in a while you have a dumb person that runs on and forgets, and instead of going to take the layup, they run to the three-point line. I think that was Denver, and who misses the game-winning shot when they could have took it to overtime just by running to the basket.
Well, listen, it's not going anywhere anytime soon, and it may expand back even further. I hope they do the four-point line. I really do. I think that would absolutely add something. Still to come, speaking of the NBA – the Spurs have parted ways with the player that they were hoping was going to play the role of the next Tim Duncan. We'll discuss in moments. It's Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Bart and Hahn.
4:30 podcast presents March 11th, 2020. The story of the day the NBA shut down and the pandemic became real for many Americans is told by those who lived the events of that day and built entirely with archival and exclusive interviews, including Rudy Gobert and Dr. Anthony Fauci. March 11th, 2020 will tell the story of a day that started in one reality and ended in an entirely new one. 30 for 30 podcast presents March 11th, 2020. Subscribe and listen now wherever you get your podcasts. Chris Garland in for Alan Hahn today. It's Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus and on your smart speaker. As always, ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Goodyear hotline. And Bart, I don't want to say I was at all surprised to hear the news this morning that the San Antonio Spurs and LaMarcus Aldridge have agreed to mutually part ways. And, you know, I know at one point they might have thought that he was going to come in and play the role that Tim Duncan did, and he had a couple of good years. He averaged 23 a few years back. They made it to the conference finals one year with him, but got swept by the Golden State Warriors. I'm not at all surprised that this happened. What I am going to be surprised about is if he has an ability to help a team really get to the next level. I'm not sure how much he has left, especially when he's a massive defensive liability.
I mean, but, you know, you think about it, he's a big body. And the game, he really hasn't evolved his game to the three-point shooter. Like, we look at guys like Al Horford. You know, we look at some of the other guys that were big men that never even attempted threes to be able to stretch their game. He's like a nice player. You know what I mean? He's like a guy that, right, at this point is a complimentary piece and it's best that both sides go their separate ways. You know, what I'm interested in to see where he's going to go. Is he going to continue to be part of an arms race between the East Coast and the West Coast beef? You know, when I say that, I'm talking about the Lakers versus, you know, the Brooklyn Nets that look like they're trying to grab all the superstars at one time to try and, you know, gather up as much talent they can to win. Or does he say, you know what, I want to be more than just a guy coming off the bench. I want to be a big part of why a team wins. So does he look at a team that's right there, like, you know, like Utah? You know, potentially saying, hey, let me go down to Dallas. Maybe I can help Dallas out and be another star to kind of go with Porzingis and Luka because Tim Hardaway Jr. doesn't get it done. Or does he say, you know what, I'm going to go to the Clippers, who I feel like we have talked least about than any other team that can potentially win a championship, you know, than any other team. Like, so it's going to be interesting to see where he decides to go. And I also want to see if Kyle Lowry gets moved.
I tell you what, I think Kyle Lowry can make a difference.
He's a little
for
pit bull.
Team.
He's the Marcus Smart.
Yeah, and I, you know, maybe a team like Philadelphia. We've heard rumors about that. I want to know if Andre Drummond's going to get bought out. That's what I want to know, because I think he can help somebody. I think he can help somebody defensively.
But if he doesn't get bought out, then Aldridge is going to be your best option as far as a big man. I know he doesn't play the defense, but he's still a good rebounder. He's still a good mid-range shooter.
You missed any of the show, you can always find both hours on the Bart and Han podcast posted daily, available wherever you get your podcasts. All right, that does it for us. Bart and I will be back tomorrow. Chris Carlin in for Alan Han. Thanks for hanging with us on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Podcast. You can listen live to Bart and Han weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN Plus. Bart and Han, the podcast.